Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. And we don't run away from it. We accept it.
Jimmy starts the drive, step back in the air.
Oh, heavy step back and kissed myself. Big time plays, make big time plays.
The ceiling is the roof.
Paul Jepster.
What? Everybody used to say, who's the best? Michael Jordan or LeBron?
Who did you think was the best?
They said,
who did you think
was the best? Kobe or LeBron?
Who did you think was the best?
Guess what the story is now? Who's better? LeVar or Michael Jordan?
Ain't nobody think about no damn LeVar.
Paul Jepster.
Looking. Finds Rose. Rose trying to get open. Fires away. Bang! It's over! The Bulls win at the buzzer! It still is a madhouse on Madison.
So that's our goal. To get younger, at positions to get more athletic, and at the same time to retool, not rebuild.
Well, welcome into the Debatables podcast brought to you by Almighty Baller Radio. My name is Jordan Malley, the host of the Debatables podcast. Today's episode is sponsored by Steiner Sports Memorabilia. Steiner Sports is the leading producer of authentic sports memorabilia and hand-signed collectibles, from game-used jersey to autographs, pictures, and so much more. Whether you're looking to add something to your man cave or simply want to continue your collection, Steiner Sports has you covered. When you're listening, you can use the promo code ALMIGHTY at checkout, and you'll receive 20% discount on all your purchases. SteinerSports.com. Steiner Sports is the leading producer of authentic sports memorabilia. All right, today's show, I'm actually really excited for today's show. I've got a guest that this is the first time he's been on the podcast. I ran a podcast straight out of college before this one, and actually Blake has never been on here, but this is one of my favorite guests, one of my dudes to talk to, Blake Rogers. He runs the Blake Rogers Show over at Almighty Baller Radio, so we're part of the Almighty Baller Radio family. You can listen to Blake Rogers on Tuesday afternoons from 2 to 3 Eastern on Dash Radio. All podcasts are going to be headed to Dash Radio. We'll be on there Thursdays from 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern every single week, so make sure you download the app. Blake, what's going on, man? How are you?
Dude, I'm so happy to be on for the first time.
I'm feeling great.
What's an outside? So you're outside of Chicago, but still in the Midwest, still understand kind of the culture that Chicago has. From a team standpoint, what's the perspective on the Bulls just outside of Chicago? I know there's a lot of negativity here on the team. What's the viewpoint from outside as far as the Bulls go?
One word I think of the Bulls, I think curious. I get real curious about this team. They're a roller coaster, you know. In the beginning of the season, they start out playing really well. I thought, okay, maybe Rondo and Jimmy Buckets and Wade, they can all mesh well together. Then, no, that didn't happen. That wasn't the case. But here we are, you know, Jimmy Butler just dropping a smooth triple-double tonight, moving Chicago to the seventh seed. It's kind of weird. And then there's rumors about Dwayne Wade coming back now, maybe making a late playoff push. So dysfunctional, curiosity, roller coaster. You can throw all those words, you know, with the Chicago Bulls. But one thing for certain, they're always entertaining.
I think what's interesting is every time I watch the Bulls on national TV, it seems like these guys don't really have a clear picture of what the Bulls are doing. They talk a lot about like the guys that you said, Jimmy Butler, Dwayne Wade, Rajon Rondo, the names that are familiar to a lot of fans in the NBA. And these national guys holding on in this core, this team that they have, supposedly core. And it's interesting, the dysfunction that the Bulls run every night out there, and you don't really know whether or not they're going to win a game or not. You look at them getting destroyed by the Knicks, and the box score doesn't tell you that. But the other night, the Knicks are playing without Derrick Rose, Kristaps Porzingis, Joakim Noah. They've got trash players on the floor, and the Bulls are down 25 in the third quarter. They ended up pulling back, only losing by 9, but still, a Knicks team that's depleted, terrible, pretty much given up. They had been eliminated from the playoffs. Then they turn it around tonight, and they tried to blow the game tonight against the 76ers. They held on to that, but the box score, just looking at it, is ugly. And specifically, it comes down to Cameron Payne and guys like Anthony Morrow and Isaiah Cannon, who are getting minutes at the end of the game. This is scary. So if we're going into the playoffs, what kind of impact? You obviously watched Dwayne Wade play throughout his peak in Miami. What can Bulls fans expect now seeing him play on the Bulls during playoff time? What does he bring? What kind of extra energy? Is there something to look forward to in this team, or am I just getting my hopes up?
No, Dwayne Wade has a history of always turning it up in the postseason. I mean, that's the case for Miami all those years. He kind of, you know, he did his thing in the regular season, the older he got, but you knew he saved that extra burst, if you will, for the playoffs. There was a time that Dwayne Wade outplayed LeBron James in the NBA Finals. Let's not forget that. So he's known for this. Even last year, he showed up against Charlotte. If it wasn't for Hassan Whiteside injury, we might have would have got a Heat versus Cavaliers Eastern Conference Finals matchup, which everybody wanted to see. Dwayne Wade turns it on, and he'll be really, really useful in the playoffs.
I think between him and Jimmy Butler, I feel like there's going to be a switch that's turned on. And the problem, I have so many problems with this team, but the one that I focused on the most, and if anybody was watching the 76ers game tonight while you're listening to this, this would be yesterday night. I watched Cameron Payne and Isaiah Cannon on the floor, and it looked like they had no idea how to play basketball. And Cameron Payne was bringing the ball up with 14 points left and a minute and a half to go, and he tosses the ball cross court, coming to the line. They're pressing him. He comes across the court, tosses the ball all the way in the corner, and it looked like he had no idea what he was doing. He tossed another full court pass with like less than 2 minutes left. Isaiah Cannon's out there taking the ball, shooting threes with 17 seconds left on the shot clock. When the Bulls are 14, so it's looking like the Bulls are going to have to depend on ultimately Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade to carry them through the playoffs. Do you think the Bulls have any shot against any of these top three teams? Because the Bulls right now, as pathetic as it is, could be as high as the fifth seed before the season's over, depending on the way the schedule falls. I mean, they're only a game and a half out of that fifth seed. So do you think the Bulls are just spinning their wheels here? They got a legitimate shot or no?
It all depends. Are they going to be playing on TNT?
That's a good question, actually.
I think that'd be the answer to your question. No, in all seriousness, could they? The upside's there, I believe. But I think when they dumped, you know, Taj Gibson and Doug McDermott, I thought the idea was just, you know, we're just gonna rebuild this puppy and see what happens. So can they make noise in the playoffs? My honest answer is no. I just don't see it happening. I mean, I'm sorry. You need better pieces to build around Jimmy Buckets. It's just simple and plain. And let's be honest here. The depth for Chicago Bulls is not that deep, too. You mentioned Cameron Payne and Isaiah Cannon, you know, showing that they're still young guards in the league making those type of mistakes. This is just not the year for the Chicago Bulls. Some of those years is not meant to be. And, you know, if you're Chicago, maybe make a nice little playoff push, you know, maybe win a couple games in the first round and then rebuild for the next year and just blow this thing up.
Cameron Payne is awful. Isaiah Cannon is arguably even worse than he is. And the worst out of all three of these guys that I'm about to say, Michael Carter Williams is garbage. And I thought when they traded for him from Milwaukee for Tony Snell, I was like, all right, makes sense. And that's actually not a bad deal. At the beginning of the season, I was looking at Michael Carter Williams from afar. I didn't follow him that closely. I just thought about rookie of the year, still being young, being able to maybe play, having that length. And then I actually watched him play night in and night out. He is god-awful. He was 1-for-7 against the 76ers. I don't know why Fred Hoiberg was playing him, but that might be another story. Just because I think maybe Rondo was out. Rondo was out tonight versus the 76ers with a wrist injury. But going into the playoffs, it's almost laughable the team that the Bulls are going to throw out there. I mean, you're going to have guys like Joffrey LaVerne and Cristiano Felicio getting the bulk of minutes at power forward, because it seems like Fred Hoiberg doesn't even want to play Bobby Portis anymore. He's been on the bench for like a week and a half. And I kid you not, Blake, if you listen to Chicago radio over the past 10 days, 2 weeks, there are fans out there that are still legitimately convinced that the Bulls could make a run in this playoffs, saying things like, you know, you never know what happens in the playoffs. You know, all they had to do was get in. But looking at a team that is trying to rebuild, and maybe you could talk about this similarly with the Heat, going to the playoffs is counterintuitive to what you're trying to do as far as rebuilding, or at least what Gar Forman and John Paxson say is retooling. Making the playoffs just hurts that type of movement, and I feel like maybe this might hurt the Heat a little bit in that way, but the Heat have a lot better players and a lot more to look forward to in the future than the Bulls do.
You absolutely read my mind. I said at the beginning of the season, I'm okay as a Heat fan losing this year. I want to lose. It's a nice draft class. I want to get a high pick. Deion Waiters and Goran Dragic and Hassan Whiteside have something to say about that. I don't think Pat Riley was expecting this, especially with Justin Winslow being out of the rotation a lot this year. As a team, the old saying goes in NBA, you either going to be really bad or really good. You don't want to be in the middle. That is being in the middle is the worst place to be in the NBA, essentially. You don't get that high draft pick, but you also, you know, you lose in the first round of the playoffs, so you want to be one way or the other. As far as Miami goes, it's going to be a close race. We have struggled with Deion Waiters out of the lineup. I even made a podcast a couple of weeks ago, Waiters Island. Essentially, Deion Waiters, you know, replicating Dwayne Wade's numbers this season when we lost Dwayne Wade from last year. So, dude, it's gonna be a tough race. As far as Chicago, I agree with your point. It really is counterintuitive. You want to see a team succeed, but the roster just isn't right. You know what I'm saying? So, it's gonna be tough.
Looking at the playoffs, so right now as it sits at 10:45 on Thursday, the Bulls have the 7th seed. They're 39-40. The Pacers sit at 39-40 at the 8th seed. The Heat obviously playing one less game, so at this point, within 12 hours, this is going to change. But the Heat are 38-40. I was looking at the teams that are left running the race for the playoffs, and between the Hawks, the Bucks, the Bulls, the Pacers, and the Heat, and I mean, you could even toss the Hornets in there too. I mean, they've got the slimmest chance of anybody, but the Heat have the toughest road the last four games. They got to play Washington twice, they got to play Cleveland once, and they have to play the Raptors once. Could this be an advantage or a disadvantage to the Heat, considering maybe the last four games LeBron won't play for Cleveland, maybe DeMar DeRozan will sit for Toronto, and then maybe you'll even see John Wall, Bradley Beal sit for Washington. So this could actually maybe play to their advantage. What are you thinking going into the last four games here?
It all depends, you know, if those star players are sitting. How close the playoff race is now, I can see Cleveland wanting to get that first seed. I mean, I think they're about half a game above Boston at this point. So, it all depends. I don't think they're gonna rest the star players. I really don't see that happening, unless you see like a certain case where they might lose a game on purpose, you know, Washington or Toronto, just to like get a favorable matchup about a team they want to play. Because we see in the NBA that it's about matchups, you know. If you have a bad matchup, it will get exploited. So I don't see the star players resting. I see them playing the rest of the season.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting you'd say that about the Cavaliers, because the Cavs, it doesn't seem like they've hit that switch, you know, that on switch that they do every single end of March, early April. It seems like that switch still hasn't been able to be turned on. I mean, they've won four straight. Okay, I'll give them that. But it's not like pure dominance like we've seen in the past. So I think you're spot on with that, with LeBron and Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving all playing, continuing into the playoffs, trying to maybe get fresh or kind of turn that page and turn that switch on. As far as the Celtics and the Raptors, I mean, they're still fighting for positioning, so it would make sense. I mean, if you're the 2 seed right now, I would much rather be playing the Bulls than maybe a team like the Bucks or the Pacers. Both those teams are far better than what the Bulls are right now. So if the Heat do make the playoffs, whether it's the 8 seed, 7 seed, and maybe even the 6 seed, which matchup do you like the best for the Heat?
I like the Boston matchup. I really do, just clearly for size. Look, for some strange reason, we can't stop Isaiah Thomas. I don't know why, but we literally just can't stop Isaiah Thomas. But we have played Boston tough in mostly every game this season. I think Whiteside would give them trouble. And I'm not saying, you know, I'm not going to be a homer or team heat. Like, no, we're fighting for a playoff spot for a position. I mean, for a reason. So it's hard to say, but I think we can play them tough and get a run for the money. As far as Cleveland, here's the thing that worries me about Cleveland is this. They remind me of the Pistons after they won their championship. They kind of like, you know, we don't care about the regular season. We just care about the playoffs. Okay, granted, you care about the playoffs, but their last finals appearance was 2007. I think they had that great run where they made 5 or 6 Eastern Conference finals, but they only went to the finals one time after that. So right. you can't take the regular season. I get rest, but you can't take it as a joke because you're going to need that rhythm. You're going to need that chemistry. Look at Golden State. They hit a rough patch, and now they're 65 wins again. I mean, and they're in rhythm of the league, 13-game winning streak without Kevin Durant. You're going to need the regular season to get in rhythm. With Cleveland, that on and off switch does not work all the time.
I think it's frustrating as both of the fans, is teams that are kind of hanging on here to last-minute playoff spots. And while, I mean, yeah, two weeks of extra basketball would be, is, I'm not going to say it's bad, but I'll take it. I've got more important things to watch. Baseball just started. We just ended the NCAA tournament. NHL playoffs are starting, and I'm putting all of that before Bulls basketball, because when I flipped on the game against the Knicks the other night, if that's the way that they're going to play throughout the playoffs, I mean, you're going home in 4 games. I don't care who you're playing. People talk about, oh, well, you know, if they could creep up to that 6th seed, they can get Toronto in the matchup. And you as we both know, Toronto, Bulls have had Toronto's number for the last 3 years. So to me, it's kind of depressing. I think looking at it as a Bulls fan, seeing what kind of roster that the Bulls have assembled, this front office has assembled, this is the worst team Gar Forman and John Paxson have put together in this era. And whether it's bench guys, from bench guys to guys that are starting to trades that they made, it all just hasn't made a lot of sense. Even draft picks that they've taken over the last 4 or 5 years. So looking at this team, looking at the playoffs moving forward, is there a possibility if the Heat do get in, the Bulls do get in, who wins more games in the playoffs throughout the first round? Or do you even see one of these teams maybe making an upset? Because right now, I can't see the Bulls doing it. Not a shot in hell, unless Jimmy Butler's scoring 60 a night.
No, I don't see an upset for either of these teams, unfortunately. I'm just here to give you the news, man. I'm not gonna sugarcoat anything. They're on the bottom of the barrel for a reason. I mean, the only team that I can see, because we've seen this last year with Boston. Granted, they added Al Horford. They just look like a regular season team to me. Same with that Atlanta Hawks team that was really good when it came to get nitty gritty in the playoffs. They lacked a couple intangibles. So I think I'm underestimating Boston. I just don't see them as in the light that most of the people around the nation do. I don't know how you feel about Boston, but I feel like any team can give them a run for their money.
Yeah, I think they don't have the, like, I don't know, in NBA fans, like major hardcore NBA fans are going to probably be yelling at me, but I'm like, I'm sitting here thinking that Boston really only has one huge superstar on their team. I mean, maybe you could call Al Horford a superstar too if you want, but the rest are like core surrounding players, and I think that's what Brad Stevens does well, is he meshes guys together and forms a really great team. He did that at Butler. Mm-hmm. He did have a lot of talent there too, but he does find guys to glue together and create a great roster. I think it is between all four teams, the one that I would least like to see play against the Bulls, and that would be the Bulls getting the fifth seed. That would be best case scenario. And that's playing the Wizards. The Bulls have been awful against the Wizards. And I'm sorry, I don't want to see Cleveland in the first round either. I think between Toronto and Boston, those are probably the two favorable matchups where you might win a game or two.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I'm with you. I don't think the Heat, I don't think the Bulls got a chance. And I think it just ruined their draft picks and their stance and as far as pushing them back even farther from the future. So, since we're on here talking about playoffs, talking about Bulls, talking about the Heat, there was this rivalry that was set in the Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah, LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh era. This constant, every single year, playoff kind of atmosphere, even in the regular season and moving to the playoffs. So I want to talk about, what's your favorite moments as far as looking back at the Bulls and the Heat? Do you have some favorite moments that come up every single year when the playoffs come on?
Remember the Nazi Muhammad hit on LeBron James?
And Muhammad fouls LeBron James, and then a technical foul on James, and Muhammad, for some reason, shoves James. And we're having it again. Players losing their cool and their poise here over what seems to be normal NBA fouls.
James shoved Muhammad. That's why the technical foul was called. And then Muhammad shoved James down.
So James gets the technical. And Muhammad has been ejected. You're absolutely right, Jim.
And if LeBron James does not fall on that, Nazi Muhammad is not ejected. That's my problem with how the officials are instructed to do it.
Now, Muhammad's getting a standing ovation from the Bulls fans.
Yeah, that was definitely like, wow, Nazi Muhammad, he's been in the league for like 15 years at that point. And he's just like, you know what, screw you, LeBron. So I thought that was great. But my favorite has to be the first matchup. I mean, Cleveland, it goes back to Cleveland and Chicago back when Rose was there and they faced off Cleveland, you know, times in the playoffs, and Cleveland just manhandled Chicago in that first round series. It goes over to, you know, LeBron goes to Miami and it's like Derrick Rose is MVP that year. This is the first time they matched up. And yes, the series only went to like five games, but it seems like it could have been so much more. Like, every game was so intense. One thing that people underlook is that, like, Mario Chalmers has his number on Derrick Rose. Like, can we be honest about that? I mean, he hits a big shot over Memphis, you know, wins the championship for Kansas.
Kansas has made only two threes on the night. They must make one here to extend the game. Collins driving, almost lost the handle. Chalmers for the tie. At midcourt for the championship. No, we're going to overtime in San Antonio.
You know, wins the championship for Kansas, and then you beat Derrick Rose, you know, with LeBron James' help, of course, but then you beat him to go to the NBA Finals and win a chip on your own the following year. So that was definitely my matchup the first time I faced off in 2011.
I totally forgot about the Derrick Rose, Mario Chalmers in the Final Four. I totally forgot about that. So that's an interesting point. I think one of the other ones, and this happened a little bit later, so the Bulls were 1-1 against Cleveland. This was a few years ago. Derrick Rose, 7 seconds left. You heard it in the intro. 7 seconds left. He came off a pick, banked that three in to win and go up 2-1 at home. That's one of my favorites, and I still think that call is fantastic. And
Dunleavy looking. Finds Rose. Rose trying to get open. Fires away. Bang!
I talked with Rajon Johnson. We were talking about favorite Bulls moments, or maybe we were talking about favorite Derrick Rose moments. And that's also one of my favorite Derrick Rose moments, is because that was him coming off two injuries already, returning for the playoffs. And at that very moment when he hit that shot, I kind of looked around to the people I was sitting with and was like, yo, guys, is Derrick Rose back? And we all kind of looked at each other and smiled, but nobody really said anything. So as we moved on, obviously, it didn't turn around. But that was one of the highlights of the playoffs, Bulls Heat. And I think one of the things that a lot of people forget, too, do you remember when Joakim Noah went up to Chris Bosh when Chris Bosh and LeBron James were yelling at each other, and Joakim Noah just went up and started clapping his hands?
no continuation there. Chalmers is the guy that always gets yelled at by the big three. Now watch Joakim Noah come into the picture. Is these two going at it? Noah's watching him, and he now starts to enjoy it.
That's one of my favorite moments too. That's why I love Joakim Noah and miss him very dearly. Wish he was healthy; he'd still be a Bull. But any other moments between the Bulls and the Heat that can come to mind as far as in the playoffs or the regular season?
It has to go back, you know, back when Dwayne Wade was in his prime. I had to go back to like the 2000-2008 year. That was when Miami was really, really struggling, and I believe we faced the Bulls in the playoffs, and it was just like. I think I was maybe 13, 12 at the time. I was like crying. I was like, what happened to this team? We beat Dallas a couple of years ago, and now we're getting manhandled by Chicago. It wasn't happy times, but definitely that Alonzo Mourning era, Tyson Chandler facing off against those boys. That was definitely a time to remember, but I should forget because it was like bad.
Yeah, that Bulls team, man, that brings up like some players, man, like Ben Gordon and Andres Nocioni, those types of guys that were on that team before Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah era. All right, so we touched on our favorite moments in the playoffs. So wrapping up our NBA talk, I got to ask you, who you got as MVP? We got three, some teams got four games left. Who you got MVP? James Harden, Russell Westbrook?
Look, for the whole season, I was saying that James Harden is the MVP, better record. James Harden got, you know, snubbed the first time Steph won his MVP. I thought James Harden should have been MVP that year. So the whole season I was like, yo, James. But what Russell Westbrook has done these last 2 weeks, it's not even like the whole season, these last 2 weeks, yes, he tied the record. But what he did against Memphis, he did not get a triple-double. I don't care about that. He got the win, and that was so important because if they would have lost to Memphis, they would have dropped down to seventh. They would have had to play San Antonio, a way tougher matchup. So Westbrook has been clutch as well. People talk about the triple doubles. Westbrook has been clutch in key moments this season, hitting game tying, you know, hitting game winners, tying games in the clutch. So it's not only the triple doubles that does it for me. I don't want to take away from Harden, but at this point, okay, we're talking about wins. Are we going to say third place in the West from the sixth place in the West is that much different? I mean, Westbrook has less talent as well. James Harden's surrounded by shooters of Eric Gordon and Lou Williams and Ryan Anderson. And that's not to take away from James, but what Russell is doing is truly incredible. And I have to give him the MVP. I have to.
Man, I'm so glad you said that because this might have turned into kind of a fight. I'm a huge James Harden fan. Yes. I will say that first and foremost. I love watching him play. He is phenomenal. And the greatest move they ever made was letting him bring the ball up and essentially play point guard. I don't care about his defense. I don't care if he's not the greatest defender in the world by any means. But you're right about Russell Westbrook. And I think there's a lot to say when somebody ties and with these last three games that the Thunder have. I think he's going to break the record, knock on wood. But that type of record it should be substantial, and people talking about the possibility that him not winning the MVP, that is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. The talent is far less, like you said, on the Thunder than it is on Houston. And given Houston's had a great year and they wouldn't be where they are without James Harden, he's got, like you said, a lot of shooters around him. And I just think it says something, especially like outside. If you don't just look at just the basketball story, you look outside of that. Kevin Durant leaving, breaking up that duo and the constant battles that they've had throughout the season and just the nonsense that's gone on. I think he's brought it to the floor every night and shown you that, you know, he is one of the best players, if not the best player in the league right now. As far as James Harden goes, comparing him to Russell Westbrook, I don't think it's really fair. The both guys have had a great years, yeah. And they've even talked about comparisons of a split MVP this year. But Russell getting his team back into the playoffs, I think that seals it. And once he breaks this record, which I think he will, I think that's going to seal it as far as MVP. So I'm glad we both got Russell as our guy, and I think I'm more than committed to say that I think he's going to be the MVP.
Can I say something real quick? This, we talked about, well, Westbrook, you know, he's a ball hog. He's the ego guy. In reality, I have not heard one player in Oklahoma City mad about what Russell's doing. You see Kanter and Adams, you know, they're supporting Westbrook and praising him. So it makes me think, was Kevin Durant the one with the ego? Was he the one that's like, you know, I'm not getting out of Westbrook is great, but yes, granted, he's getting more shots in Golden State, but maybe Westbrook was a more laggable player in OKC the whole time.
That's interesting. Kevin, yeah, and to me, I felt like those two, the playoff losses are really tough on both of those guys, and the criticism that comes hammering down after they lost, I think, weighs on those guys a lot. And instead of coming together, they felt like that their egos were different and bigger than each other and bigger than maybe even winning a championship. Mm-hmm. Kevin Durant went to Golden State to do that very thing, is to win a championship. I think it shows that Russell Westbrook had a lot more loyalty to Thunder than maybe Kevin Durant did, and he felt like he could still be the guy to lead them to a championship at some point. So I think another interesting dynamic to this MVP talk, too, is that Russell Westbrook is the guy that you always see in front of a camera, always talking, always saying something. Mm-hmm. Have you heard anything from James Harden all year? Maybe that's just me. Maybe that's just me not following the Rockets as closely. But have you heard him say literally anything this year?
No, not at all. But, you know, I think James Harden isn't as explosive and vibrant as Russell Westbrook. James is more, he's a more smooth player, more graceful the way he plays. Westbrook is I'm dunking on your throat and I'm going to be real expressive about it. So I think Westbrook is more for the camera with his fashion, with his, you know, his bizarre interviews. So Westbrook is definitely, you know, more of a camera guy, which leads me to this, because we have to talk about LeBron James. LeBron, this is like the Michael Jordan effect, when like you can basically say Michael Jordan's MVP every year, same with LeBron, just like for what he does for a franchise. This reminds me of the year when Karl Malone won in like 1998, and Jordan was like, oh, you're gonna snip me, you know. So this reminds me of, like, you know, we're getting sick of LeBron winning every year, we're getting sick of Jordan winning every year, we're gonna get to somebody else and just disregard, you know, LeBron, what he's done. I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, I guess, to me, it makes sense, because we're looking at two guys that are possibly peaking and gonna turn that page, and I don't know if we're exactly there yet, but to me, it feels like if a fan was to sit and turn over LeBron's career, we've got our hand on the page, ready to turn it, we're just finishing the last couple words on that page. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's just me, but for what LeBron's done, I think you're right, it does get overlooked a lot. I might have a little bit biased because I'm from Chicago, and 99.9% of people in Chicago hate LeBron James.
Rightfully so.
And the decision might, if you bring up the decision with anybody in Chicago, they will go off about how they hate LeBron James, and he's got this huge ego. I respect LeBron. He's the greatest player probably ever witnessed play basketball. I was too young for Michael, so this is going to be the next best thing. And there's argument all the time. Every day it seems like it's a topic between Michael and LeBron. So talking about Michael, actually, this brings up a good point. So I heard Dennis Rodman say something the other day. He was asked about LeBron James taking nights off and that affecting the NBA. And what Dennis Rodman basically said was, Michael never took off a night. Michael was always there. He was played every game. He played his heart out in every game, and he'd get the crap beat out of him every night, and he'd still put up 35, 40 points a night. And you got LeBron, who's sitting out games because he needs rest, or he's got, you know, an issue with his back, or blah, blah, so on and so forth. He backed Michael Jordan, saying that he's a tougher player and exemplifies the NBA better than LeBron. Steve Kerr took a couple shots at Dennis Rodman, not necessarily at Michael, but what do you think about this constant LeBron-Michael talk? I mean, sometimes it just gets old.
It really does get old. It used to be, you know, Michael Kobe, and then now it's like Kobe LeBron, now it's Michael LeBron. Just let them be great at what they do. To me, LeBron will always be more Magic to me than Michael. I mean, LeBron can score. We kind of take his scoring for granted, but the way that LeBron just elevates people around him is just more like Magic Johnson like to me. As far as what Rodman said, I love Steve Kerr's comeback, by the way, saying, like, well, Rodman has a lot to talk. He got suspended 15 games again. He got plenty of rest. But it all comes down to your preference. I mean, do you believe in work smarter, not harder, or do you believe in you go at it every single day? So in that you know, perspective, a whole different era too. Granted, the league has gotten softer, but LeBron, he deserves some rest. Now when you have, like, you know, C-list scrubs, you know, getting rest, and I'm not gonna call them scrubs, they're NBA players, but the scrubs, you know, and they're, I sound like Stephen A. Smith, Kwame Brown, he's a bona fide scrub, but you know what I mean, like, in their competition, I don't believe in the lower guys getting rest, but LeBron, with all he's done for the league, he definitely deserves rest.
I'm with you. I don't care if the players are going to take off rest, because really what really matters in the end of it is the playoffs. Yes. LeBron's not going to be taking time off in the playoffs. I understand it from the fans' point of view. I would be angry as hell if I went to a game and LeBron, Kyrie, and Kevin Love were all sitting that night and making fools of themselves on the bench, dressed up, whatever. I would probably be pretty pissed too. Spending anywhere between $85 to $300, $400, $500 on a ticket. I don't know what prices are for Cavs tickets. I haven't looked at them. But knowing the Bulls and just knowing how much it costs to go to a Bulls game, even as bad as the Bulls are, they're still charging anywhere, like I said, to sit in the 300 level in the nosebleeds, $85 to $150 to sit there. So to me, I would be probably pretty angry, but I'll just say this. You can sit at home for free and watch LeBron almost every night if you want. Sign up for NBA League Pass, you can watch him every night. So that's kind of my issue with it. All right. So we talked about MVP, we talked about the Bulls, the Heat. I want to get to your more expertise, and if you're listening to this and you haven't listened to the Blake Rogers Show, I highly suggest it. Been on it a couple times as a guest. It's a great listen. He's the hip-hop guy of the Almighty Baller Radio. He's the hip-hop aficionado. So I want to talk a little bit about Kendrick Lamar and Drake, because I think the last time I was on it, Drake didn't release his album quite yet.
No.
And then Kendrick dropped these two new songs, and there's major, major beef going on between Kendrick and, it seemed like, Big Sean. So give me your overall review of the last couple weeks of music and all the new releases. What's your favorite? What did you hate? What were you shocked by?
You know, these last couple of weeks in music has been great. I don't know what else to say about it. You know, like I said, Migos, Culture, and Big Sean, I decided they were appetizers for the main event, which we got with More Life, which I thought was phenomenal. Besides the Giggs verse, but you know how. I'm sorry if I offend the UK if you're listening, but you know, some things just isn't meant to be. I thought More Life was great, and to me it was kind of weird, because I don't know if you felt this way, Kendrick was just kind of creeping. He was just like, because nobody's even talking about Kendrick, he was kind of creeping, and then Drake did his thing, and then bam, okay, well, I'll Kendrick with the Heart Part 4, and then bam, Humble. Dude, here's my thing with Kendrick. Nobody is denying his lyrics. Nobody is denying his creativity. One thing that I'll say that Kendrick is better than Drake at, Kendrick has way better music videos. I'm a big guy in music videos, and I think the Be Humble music video is just crazy. As far as the Big Sean Kendrick beef, if there is beef, subliminal dissing, whatever you want to call it, Big Sean has every right to defend himself. He has every right to. I mean, for people to say that Kendrick lost Big Sean on Control, and this track came out, what, how many years ago, Jordan? What, 4 or 5 years ago?
Yeah, something like that. I can't think of it off the top of my head, but yeah.
It came out with, it was supposed to be on Hall of Fame. It didn't come out on Hall of Fame, quote-unquote, for sampling reason, which I don't buy. But
yeah, me either.
I mean, Big Sean, if you go back to that verse, Big Sean killed that verse. He did not get washed. To this day, What Kendrick did was he named out the whole bunch of rappers and called them out. Are we going to make that the greatest rap verse of the last 10 years? I mean, I thought it was just overvalued in the way we put that lyrics, because Kendrick is just so much better than that. With him and Big Sean beefing, I don't know. I would like to see name drops in this, because I think Big Sean has bars that we don't even see yet. We see how many lyrics Big Sean can take it. But Be Humble is just crazy. Crazy joint. Love it.
I will say this, and I'm always sticking to it, always will back it. Big Sean is the first ballot number one greatest feature artist of this last decade, I would say. Any song he features on, he kills it. He kills it. If you were just basing a rapper and their overall on just features, Big Sean's number one, without a doubt. You go back to any song, and I think about the one song that really solidified it for me, the song he did on Logic's last album, maybe two albums
ago. All right.
Yes, yeah. that was one of my favorite songs for over a year, and his verse on that is phenomenal. And just the lyrics, the way he's able to play with themes and just bouncing off and making metaphors and comparisons is crazy. I think Big Sean's great. To talk about Kendrick, what I thought about Kendrick is, and it's funny, you said this in the beginning. You said that he was kind of lurking and he was waiting for Drake to be kind of done releasing his album. Same with Big Sean, same with Migos. And he's like, yeah, yo, all right, let me remind people who's really the king around here. And I will say about this, about Hard Part 4. When he said 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I'm the greatest rapper alive, I shut it off. I said, no, I'm not listening to that. I said, no. You know what? You're to put that in a song, and I don't know if maybe he was mocking some people in that, and the reason why he put that in there, or he just needed a filler or something, that was lame. So I was like, I turned it off, and my buddy texted me about Humble, and he's like, did you guys see the music video for Humble yet? And I go, the first thing I asked him, because I hadn't even listened to the song, I said, does it include 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I'm the greatest rapper alive? He's like, dude, just go watch it. So I did. And that first 15 seconds that beat drops, oh my lord. Mm-hmm. If he's coming out with an album soon, oh my lord, it's going to be good.
Well, I made a Twitter poll, I believe, a couple weeks ago. And I was like, well, you know, Drake has been owning Apple Music and Spotify. And will Kendrick break the streaming record that Drake has? We were like 90 million in the first like week. 62% said no. The way that this is before Be Humble. Well, with Be Humble dropping, it can change some things, but I still think Drake is going to own that Spotify record. But remember, Kendrick broke the Spotify record for Untitled, and then Drake came back and broke it with, I believe, What a Time to Be Alive. I believe it was that. So they're constantly battling. I don't know if you get the subliminals when he kind of mocked Big Sean with the hold up, you know how Big Sean he was like kind of mocking that throughout the whole song. Here's the thing with Kendrick, and I respect the hell out of Kendrick. I still think The Pimp a Butterfly is one of the greatest albums last, you know, this decade. So with Kendrick saying, you know, I'm the greatest rapper alive, and then he comes out with a track saying Be Humble, and it's supposed to be shots at Big Sean. Big Sean is the most, from his interviews, is the most wholesome, down-to-earth, egoless dude that you can think of in the rap game. Like we said, Big Sean is the Kawhi Leonard of the rap game. So for Kendrick to say Be Humble if he's directing that to Big Sean, I think somebody needs to get their ego in check.
All right, you got to tell me, what was the response on your timeline after this music video dropped for Humble?
You know, the Kendrick stans were out. I don't know who's worse. I don't know if Drake stans are worse or Kendrick stans are worse. Probably Nicki Minaj stans are probably the worst, because she has not been on her A-game lately. But no, the TL, you know, surprisingly, the Heart Part 4 actually was more lit than the Humble music video, which was weird to me. I think the people kind of reacted to the Heart Part 4 more. That was my feed around it, because I didn't see a lot of posts about it. So what about you?
Yeah, I didn't either. I saw it maybe for a day or two, and then it kind of went away. I think it was just think after the Hart Part 4 came out, people started this whole like argument, and it kind of overshadowed what Kendrick had dropped. And one thing I want to say about this, about the Spotify numbers, and this might alter it a lot, is I know for a fact the first like 36 hours that Humble was dropped on that Thursday night, like Friday morning, you couldn't stream Humble at all on Spotify till like Saturday afternoon, because I remember trying to play it all like over and over on Friday, and it wasn't letting me. So that might kind of alter the numbers as far as like whether or not they were allowed to play it on the first day it dropped or not. Sometimes Spotify has that weird thing with Apple Music too. So that might alter some of the numbers. I think if Kendrick's going to drop an album relatively soon, I'm excited as a music fan. And I think, I don't understand, these guys, why can't we all just make a lot of really good music and just enjoy all of it? Why's there got to be beef? I guess you can compare it to the NBA or any professional sports with these guys always wanting to be the best and having some rivalries. But for a fan, I mean, this is the best time to love music and the greatest time to listen to music right now.
Yeah. I think just the nature of hip hop. I mean, it started off with just battle rapping and trying to diss you and make you look bad. So I guess like what Kendrick said, he wants to bring that back. So it's funny to me how like immediately Drake just got turned off by Kendrick. He was just like, "All right, dude, I'm done with you. I want nothing to say with you." But I was talking to my friend Brandon. We do a lot of music reviews, and we were just like, "Well, Drake, like, you know, he put The Weeknd on, and I didn't hear about Kendrick Lamar. Like, even on Buried Alive interlude, I didn't even know that was like Kendrick, you know, speaking." So, and they did Poetic Justice together. So Drake and Kendrick they have had nice collabs, so it's kind of disappointing to be like, oh man, they're not making music together anymore. Even with Big Sean, it's kind of, with me, Big Sean and Drake have no beef. They made Bless, and that was a freaking hit for a year or so. So it's like, right, it's not really Drake and Big Sean. It's more like Kendrick instigating a lot of things.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know. Maybe that's came with the Grammys and the stardom, and I don't know. Maybe it's just all of it, but I feel like at some point this is all going to turn around and kind of they're going to figure out whatever's wrong with each other, whatever type of beef they have together. This is the final music question I got to ask you. We haven't heard from Kanye West in a while. I mean, he was on Glow. He featured in Glow. Maybe has he done anything besides that before that?
No.
I don't think so. I can't think. Nothing comes to mind. So, are we going to see some kind of Kanye coming out of the darkness of, you know, his collapse as far as his tour went and everything that went with that in the fall? Are we going to see some kind of resurgence? Because remember, a year ago at this point, we were talking about possibly 3 or 4 Kanye albums in 1 year. He only dropped one. Are we going to see something different? Are we going to see something from him anytime soon?
Well, man, we can't ignore how bad, like, just, like, put yourself in that situation and how bad, like, Kanye collapsed. I mean, from the whole Kim K thing, you know, getting stuck up in Paris, and it's just a whole mess going on. He collapsed, and it takes time to recover. I think this is the most stable we have heard from Kanye in a while, because he hasn't been tweeting anything crazy, and we haven't heard anything from Kanye. So I'm assuming that everything's okay. I mean, keep in mind that there's been rumors about a Watch the Throne 2. Apparently, you know, Jay and Kanye. Yeah, I know, right? Apparently, Jay and Kanye, you know, aren't on the best terms, but they're trying to hash that out. They're family. I mean, they know each other for over 2 decades now. So they'll definitely hash things out. I mean, I would definitely want to see a Watch the Throne 2. I think that would be the next thing that Kanye puts out.
I would love that. I know Jay-Z had said he was like kind of pretty much done as far as making full albums, but I think he would come back for that collab. But their relationship, I think, has to mend first. But yeah, you brought up the Kim K incident. I remember I actually went to Kanye's show, his first show back in Chicago. He canceled a couple dates before that. I remember him coming back. And what I tell people every time I talk about this is, first of all, the doors opened at the United Center at 7. He was supposed to go on at 8. He didn't go on until 10. He played for 2.5 hours straight from the beginning to the end, did not say a word like he had in a lot of his other shows where he had went on rants. He didn't say a word. And that was the first time he had played in Chicago in a long time. And I got to say, that's still probably one of the best performances I've seen. And I've seen Kendrick, Schoolboy, Chance, Kanye, Childish. I've seen the lineup. And Big Sean, even. I've seen Big Sean a couple times. And he put on the best performance. So I'm hoping something comes soon from that. All right, I want to do our last segment here. This is a segment that I'm bringing over from my old podcast, and it's called Log Off. So I asked Blake to find the dumbest, most idiotic, ridiculous take on Twitter from the last week. What do you got for me, Blake?
Okay, I had a music take. Look, you ever watched Dead End Hip Hop on YouTube? You ever heard of those guys before?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm a huge fan of Dead End Hip Hop. I don't agree with them all the time, but I do like their takes, and I have a whole lot of respect for Dead End Hip Hop and that YouTube channel. But they were reviewing More Life, and I believe one of the guys, I believe it was Mike. And he said that Drake did. He said that Giggs had the better verse than Drake on KMT.
Are you kidding me?
Mike said that Giggs had the better verse than Drake on KMT in No Long Talk, and Drake was actually trying to copy Giggs' style to sound like him.
Stop.
After that, I just closed out the YouTube app and I logged off.
Give me the dirty. Dude, I can't take that verse. That verse is awful. It ruins the entire song. And he's on another song on that album. Maybe I'm mistaken. Maybe he's on a couple more.
Yeah, No Long Talk.
Oh, right. And I don't know. I went and listened. I actually was interested. I went and listened to some of his other music that he does by himself. I found a couple songs and I was like, all right, this is not bad. It's not great, but it's not bad. It'd be something I would hear at a party and like people would bump to it, but you know, it's not recognizable. That's ridiculous. I can't believe that, to be honest. And I will say I'm guilty of something because you can attest to this. I listened to Drake's album for the first time and I was kind of skipping through it. And I had sent you a direct message on Twitter and I said, yo, is it just me, or is it just all... Does Drake have any lyrics on this album? And it wasn't until I fully listened the second time all the way through that I was like, all right, never mind. That's a dumb take. I should log off.
You're going to log off on your own self?
Yes.
There's no more debatables then.
Sorry, this will be our last episode. No, I'm just kidding. All right, so for my log off, I talked a lot about LeVar Ball with Rajon Johnson, who was our last guest.
Uh-huh.
And he said one of the most idiotic things I think I've ever heard come out of somebody's mouth, but I shouldn't be surprised by that because he said a lot of really stupid things. Uh-huh. He's very entertaining, I will say that, but he said a lot of really idiotic things.
Yeah.
And he said the reason why UCLA lost was because they had three white guys out there that could not move, that their feet were too slow. But does LeVar Ball realize that his sons are half white? If he was looking at sponsorship deals and presents for his sons and everything else, this take is awful. Like, why would you come out and say something so stupid? Even when both of your sons after Lonzo are committed to UCLA, so why would you say something so stupid? So, LeVar Ball, please stop talking and log off. What did you think about LeVar Ball, too? In a minute span, what can you tell me about LeVar Ball's takes?
I mean, I think LeVar Ball is definitely a light skin. He's definitely light skin. You know what? I think it was definitely politically incorrect, but I think that's just how the way he was raised. You know, White Man Can't Jump, you know, the movie, classic movie.
Yeah.
You know, where he's just constantly getting underestimated because of his skin tone. So I think it's just the culture he was raised in. And, you know, LeVar is not afraid of the spotlight, but that was definitely the politically incorrect take. To make.
With that, Blake, I want to say this has been a great podcast, and I want everybody to know where they can listen to you, where they can follow you on Twitter. You can follow the Blake Rogers Show at BRogShow on Twitter. You can follow him at almightyballer.com. You can find all of his episodes there. Like I said at the beginning of the episode, Dash Radio, he'll be there on Dash Radio for a half hour every single week on Tuesdays from 2 to 2:30 Eastern. The Debatables are on Thursdays from 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern on Dash Radio. Make sure you download Dash Radio. We are starting this week, so make sure you download the app. You'll be able to hear us live on Dash Radio. There's a lot of really cool stations on Dash Radio, too. Young Money Radio just started with Lil Wayne. A lot of DJs, a lot of up-and-coming artists, established artists run radio shows on Dash Radio. And if you like hip-hop music, obviously, Blake Rogers is your man. If you want to listen to anything else, XXL also has a radio station too on there, so you'll be able to get it 24/7, 365 days a year. And the best part, it's free. Blake, thank you again so much for your time today. We're definitely going to have to get you on again. You're going to be a reoccurring guest. I'm a guest on your show a lot too, so this was a lot of fun.
Dude, you might got to make our own podcast, man.
I know, right?
Jeez Louise, it's so much fun when we do our podcast together. It's a great time.
All right, for the Debatables podcast, for our guest Blake Rogers, I'm Jordan Malley. You can follow me on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley. You can follow us at Debatables on Twitter, almightyballer.com/debatables. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Download the Dash Radio app. For Jordan Malley, Blake Rogers, we are out. Deuces.
Look.
Free Bobby Portis.